Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Oh, well, hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 42, Episode 5 of the Daily Zeitgeist for August 3rd, 2018. Pennies, my name is Miles Gray, a.k.a. Where My Miles At? From the Gray to Jack, and are you feeling that? Put my volume up, Nick, did you hear that? Reppin' hard, Zeit Gangzam, can you hack that? Trump, you played yourself. Ooh, that was a nice 702 inspired, a.k.a. by at Crisper Baby. Hex, I see you out there, so thank you for that, a.k.a. It's a straight shot to my heart. Love the group 702. And I am thrilled to have as my guest co-host today one of the other faces on Mount Zeitmore you would see in terms of one of our amazing guests. Please welcome the hilarious comedian, Billy Wayne Davis.
Hey.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm not going to rap.
Okay, well then sing me something.
You guys didn't prep me for any of this.
Well,
you
that's
just,
how
like,
we do
right
this.
Before we started, she was like, what's your AKA? And I was like, also known as.
AKA also known as.
Yes, that's
William Wayne Davis.
DJ AKA.
Are you legally Billy or are you William?
Oh, I'm not. I'm coming from poor, so I'm just Billy.
Oh, wow.
So we couldn't afford the
Willie. You couldn't afford the William.
We were aware that you could do that. We didn't know that Billy was a nickname. That's just a beautiful name.
You just thought that was an act?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. They were right.
But. Well, in our third seat, we are joined by a very special guest today. We're sort of creating an unholy podcast alliance of sorts with this episode. I would love to welcome, and it's my honor to welcome, the CEO of Starburns Audio, Mr. Jason Smith. You know, Starburns, the home of such amazing podcasts like Harmontown with Dan Harmon, Small Doses with Amanda Seale, Soft Spot with Julian McCullough, and Pen Pals with a frequent guest, Daniel Van Kirk, and hopefully one day we'll get Rory Scovel in. But yes, please welcome Jason Smith. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming by. How you feeling?
I'm good. You know, this is actually the first time I've actually done a podcast.
Really?
This time. I did like a Patreon version of a video game podcast once.
Right.
And then my former partner recorded me for a bunch of stuff, but we never actually released it.
So wow.
This is the first time most anybody's actually heard me speak or maybe even knows that I exist.
So this is a scoop.
Yes. This is a scoop.
You are hearing right now, this is the voice of Jason Smith. This is the voice of Starburns Audio.
How long have you been involved with podcasts?
Almost 5 years now.
And you've never been like, I'm going to talk.
No.
That's awesome.
There have been some urges to do it, but like then you sit down and you're working with Dan Harmon or you're working with the Sklars.
I've never heard anything bad about him.
Oh, never.
Never.
Never. He actually is like one of the most genuinely nice human beings in the whole wide world.
I have met, yes, I can attest to that.
Yeah, but you listen to these people and you sit down and you're like, I'm never, ever, ever going to be able to hit that level. I might as well just kind of like stay in the sidelines. Well,
did you ever have like a first inkling, like maybe I could do a podcast about this? What would it have been about?
Oh, I still want to do one, where it's not really for other people to hear, but it's so my wife and I can actually talk. So I want to I want to do a podcast where we just sit down and we have a real fight in front of a real judge. Not like Judge Mills Lane or Judge Judy, but like somebody that actually judges us and have our real fight together in the podcast form, because I think that we would actually sit down. We'd have to think about what we were saying.
Right, really come with it.
Mm-hmm. And we'd have to listen and we'd have to respond. And then I want to put it out there. So we can't just fight. So
isn't
that
what couples therapy is?
Is it specifically that? Then that's what I want to do.
Like
I want to be
fighting. That's what me and my...
Oh, that's how you use the show.
I think that's
how
we view, well, not even the show. I think that's how we view like actual couples therapy.
Oh, literal couples therapy, right?
Like that's how we kind of use it. We're like, yo, we probably need to talk through this.
Yeah, then that's what I want to do. I want to create that for me, but through this.
Oh, I feel
but
like
I like the drama of like a courtroom, like a procedural show.
Yeah. Well, I what I love about podcasts is that you have to sit here and you have to kind of take everything in and you have to listen.
Right.
And we don't do a good job of that all the time.
Yeah.
And so I've always wanted to do that podcast. I also, my daughter was on MasterChef Junior as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to do a cooking show with her.
Oh, nice. All right. Okay. All right, well, before we get to know you a little bit more, Jason.
You're tricking yourself into spending more time with your family.
It really is. Like, I mean, I live that podcast life. I may not be on the air, but I'm behind the scenes all day. So if you guys want to hang out with me, you better hang out with me over the air. Otherwise,
right. Work this in to make a little money, too. Let's do this.
Exactly. I got to monetize you guys. Come on.
Yeah, here we go. So, before we get into the show, let's talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about so you guys know what's coming up. Today, we're just going to talk, a little bit about how, I think we already know this, how Trump isn't a leader, actually. And it looks like he's relying on the intelligence community to protect us because he can't. A little bit of culture wars going on, in the New York Times hired Sarah Jong for the op-ed section, and the alt-right came and said, she's racist, don't hire her. Also, talking about the administration, also saying that it's now, I guess, the ACLU's job to reunite the families that they separated. Also, just kind of, let's just check in a little bit with Trump world and how all the lies are going, because they seem to be ramping up. Also, talking a little bit about the new, Christopher Robin movie that's coming out. That's, we're going to look into what that man's life was really like. It wasn't just all honeypots.
A grown adult man?
Yeah.
It wasn't just living in a...
Well, you're
going
to hold on to your hat, Billy, because it's...
He probably, like,
wants to
have
in.
Sex with people.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah,
man.
I mean, inject your own commentary.
I bet he does. I bet he ends up wanting to have sex with things.
Oh, poo.
And, and then also do a little Bloid watch, because it was getting real for Mr. David Pecker. But before we do all that, Jason, what is something from your search history that is revealing about you as a person?
Oh, I don't know about revealing. Revealing this week... I looked through my search history, and the only thing that I could see that wasn't related to podcasts was, what is the protocol for a Montreal strip club?
What is protocol for a Montreal strip club? Okay, go on.
Well, I was born and raised in Nevada, so it actually says a lot about me. I was born and raised in Reno, Nevada. I was born and raised around gambling, strip clubs, the casinos, the whole bit.
Yeah.
So when we were up in JFL this last week,
right.
Somebody invited me to a strip club, and I'm like, okay, well, this is weird because dollars are change here.
Right.
That's
and
nice.
So you don't want to pelt
that
people
is,
with
I don't
coins.
Want to pelt Etiquette. People. I know the rules of the strip club in general, but I really just was confused. What does this mean? What do I do? How do I navigate
the
situation?
You don't make a wish. Yeah. Do not make a wish. They do not like
but that. But yeah, and so I am not afraid or ashamed, or I don't think there's anything weird about going to a club like that.
Uh-huh.
But what I think it really says about me, I like to be prepared. Even even in a strip club situation.
No
how am
faux
I gonna
pas.
Do yeah. I don't want to act out of school. I don't want to touch where I'm not supposed to touch.
Like,
I want to
no
be able to touch where I'm allowed to.
No more shame needed.
Exactly.
Right? Yes,
exactly.
And so what is protocol?
Okay, so you have to tip the bouncer.
Okay.
So you tip the bouncer $5-$10.
Wow.
You
okay.
You don't have to tip the ladies dancing.
What?
No, you can if you want to, but you don't have to. So
wow.
Basically giving the tip to the bouncer is the same thing. So you're giving them a little bit of money.
And that trickles down to the dancer?
It's
like a restaurant thing where they get a pot at the end, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And then
that's a fancy restaurant.
Yeah. And then the main thing is they all have the VIP room stuff. So they still push the VIP.
Got
room.
You. That's where the money's being made.
And so it's the same. It's basically the same thing. It's actually cheaper. And with the Canadian dollars where it's at, it's really a reasonable
price. Guys, yeah. And we were worried about Donald Trump tanking the economy.
But then the other weird thing that's different in, at least in Montreal, and maybe hopefully not just at the strip club I'm at, so I'm not speaking out of turn, is you can touch. And that is bizarre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywhere that there's not clothing covering.
Right.
I mean, anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, which is not necessarily what I'm very comfortable with.
It feels odd, yeah, for, yeah, America's, it's very much like, yo, touch them and get your arms broken.
I know exactly where my hands go on the side of the chair. So that's what I've learned. And that's, and then I also learned that they don't spray near as much perfume on themselves as American strippers. So it's very much just like you smell all the other people that have also.
Right. So you smell a lot of Black Ice air freshener the Uber ride over there.
Exactly.
Is that preferable?
I don't. No. No, it's definitely just like a steady BO.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a lot of dancing. I mean, you go up there and dance. That's a lot of work. Those girls are strong, but that means sweat. That means
The hormones are coming out. Yeah,
exactly.
What's something that is overrated?
The new Venom trailer.
Mm.
And in fact, Venom, I think, as a superhero in general, is very overrated. Yes, you're pointing at my Spider-Man tattoo.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Venom is, in my mind, the worst of his villains, the Rogues Gallery.
Right.
And the new movies, I don't care. You just can't make that character interesting to me.
Really?
And I don't like the way he talks, because he talks kind of like a puppet. Like a Muppet, because there's no lips on him.
Right.
So it's like, I am Venom.
Right.
And it's just, it makes me crazy. Every time I see it, my friends are like, oh, it looks good. I was like, it's not, and it won't be, and I don't want to get my hopes up for it. And if they figure out a way, maybe, but no.
If you could direct it, how would you do it?
I would get rid of the whole Eddie Brock stuff and go with the Flash Thompson stuff. Like, so for a long time, Venom was like connected to Flash. I don't know how nerdy to get, but Peter Parker's friend from high school.
Yeah.
After he's in the military, because he had gone paraplegic. And so they did a whole bunch of, like, he became a good guy, but kind of a mercenary.
Ah.
Great, great setup. It was just a lot more fun. It made sense. It's not, you know, Venom's just a weird villain. He's afraid of sounds and fire. Like, he's the easiest villain to beat, really.
Right.
You get a match
or
a cigarette lighter, and that guy's done. You're done.
Right.
You don't have to deal with this guy.
Right, just like light a cigarette up, play the Metallica around, and it's like, oh,
snake.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's one headbanger away from just like disappearing down a drain.
Right. Just like I'm gonna go. Yeah. What's something that's underrated?
I thought about this a lot.
Okay,
Crocs.
Yeah,
Crocs are underrated.
Talk that shit, Jason.
All right.
Whoa.
So last year, I moved into the Starburns Audio offices, and we got it all set up.
And you live there.
And now I just live there forever.
Right. So you moved in with your family.
I pretty much. Yeah, you know, between Crocs and sleeves, I think both are very overrated. But what ended up happening is, as a joke, one of my coworkers of the company I was left got me a pair of Crocs, and I was like, ha ha ha, Crocs.
Right.
I put them on one day. I was just sitting in the office, slid them on without shoes, without socks, with socks. My feet are comfy.
Yeah.
I could walk around. I could slip those suckers off when I need to.
Yes.
Put them back on. Oh, my feet are cradled. I don't care what anybody says about it.
Yeah.
They are beautiful, beautiful things, and my feet have never loved me more.
Yeah. It's the sensation of a Croc. I remember the first time I wore them, my dad had them, and this was maybe 10 years ago. And, like, this is when Crocs first came out, and they really had the worst rep. Like, people were like, dude, really? Like, those weird Croc-y things? And then I put them on and walked, and I couldn't believe. It was one of those moments where I had to feel like I had to keep up my hatred of it. But the truth was in front of me. The truth was on my feet. These things are comfortable as shit, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is around the office. I have and they're gross too. They're ugly and camouflaged.
Oh, camo Crocs?
They're camo Crocs, and there's like fur inside them. There's no reason that these should exist.
Wow.
We have three people in the office now that rock the same camo Crocs, and not because we knew about each other.
Right.
We discovered each other together.
Wow.
We're all rocking camo Crocs together. Like, it's a thing. Some guy who was over, you know, they have like one of those car wash services that's like, you know, online. So he just shows up at the office.
Oh, yeah.
He's rocking the same camo Crocs. Like, he's like, slipping out of the cars. It's easy. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to preach that Croc life.
See, we need that Croc. We need that Croc sponsorship. Billy, what's your take on Crocs?
I mean, I'm for anything that you're comfortable with. I tried that thing with boots a while ago because they look good. And everybody was on boots. And then I wore them for like a month straight. And then I put tennis shoes on to go on a flight, and I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah, right?
Wait, Croc boots?
No, just like tennis. No, I was wearing boots because they look good.
Right, because you were always wearing boots. Got you, yeah.
With like pants and stuff, people were like, this is like a person that cares about himself.
Right.
And it's like some illusion because I don't. And then one day I put tennis shoes on. I was like, well, if I truly care about myself, I would just wear these tennis shoes everywhere. Like, I'm wearing flip-flops right now because we're on a podcast.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So not just because you don't care about yourself.
Yeah, and I just haven't moved to Crocs yet because I know myself enough to be like, oh, I'm not coming back. It's like why I haven't flown private ever. It's like because I can't own a private jet, so I don't want to know.
But Crocs are a little more attainable, you know?
I know, but it's still that it's a threshold.
You'll
I
be like believe. The venom of Crocs where it just starts like, taking over your body.
He just attested to it. He was like, someone gave him Crocs.
Right,
he was
right.
Like, no, this is bullshit. And then he put them on. He's like, this is my life now.
Right.
My daughter and I fight over my Crocs, and she's 14, and she's got
huge
feet.
They know comfort.
They know comfort. She doesn't care. She's like, those are my Crocs.
Oh, I mean, she's fighting like, let me wear your Crocs, Dad. Yeah. Oh, wow. Not like, Dad, get rid of the Crocs when you're taking me to school.
No, it's the exact opposite. It's, I want those Crocs.
And wow. Those are my Crocs. Yeah. All right, well, Crocs, holler at us and Jason. You know, we've got some good testimonials here. And finally, what's a myth that people just get wrong about what's going on in the world that you know that they're getting wrong? That you know
you
a deeper
just
truth.
Let off with like Trump's like doing all right.
I thought about this one a lot too.
Okay.
Everybody who plays those slot machines, I thought I'd bring some Reno back in.
Okay.
Here. That's all an illusion. You're not playing anything. Those slot machines are bullshit. Basically, the way a slot machine works is all those spins have already been spun. You're just pushing a button to get reveal an answer. Like there's a big sheet of all that stuff sitting in a back office somewhere because they have to report all that stuff.
Right.
And so like all those Mega Millions and stuff. So when you push the button, all that spinning is just...
It's pre-scripted.
It's glitter.
Oh.
It's just all glitter. They know they don't not only know it before you've spun or put the quarter in, they've known it for months before that thing even went out into the world. So like there's no such thing as a hot streak. There's no such thing as any of that stuff. It's all imaginary. You basically are just paying somebody, and instead of it just going win, lose, you're just paying for that, the pageantry. Yeah, exactly.
Wait, but don't people, well, so what happens when people win? That's just because it's pre-scripted, basically.
And yeah.
So if anything, those people are just lucky that they were enough people spun it to get to the point where it actually paid
it's
out.
It's like a line of people walking by for a long time, and then just one dude finally goes, you.
Yeah. Right.
And then, right. It's and exactly then,
yeah. Like and just being the millionth customer without knowing where you are in that queue.
Here's a bunch of money.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how much change you put in. It doesn't matter how many times you spin. There's no warm up or close. That's why like the ones on the end are always the most. They hit the most. It's because they're used the most.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, it's just one of those things. Just know those slot machines have been preordained because they know that because people cheat and like will try and break the machine. And so they can actually look back and go, nope, this wasn't supposed to hit for 82 more spins.
Wow. Well, that's why I play blackjack.
That's right.
You know, because that's right in front of me, and I can use a little bit of skill.
Penny slots are fun if you just like to just sit there, and I like to people watch in the penny slots.
Right.
You put like $100 in.
$100 worth of penny slots you'd play?
Yeah, you can win money. Like if you win like $50 real quick, and then you just pull it out, and then you can play $50 worth of.
Well, and you can get, I mean, the drinks, the person making the drinks is making them just as strong in the penny slots as they are on the
exactly.
You know,
right. Like the whale tables for, perfect. Well,
I'm pretty stoned a lot of times in casinos, so I'm just like, what's happening?
Right. You're like, I need to sit down and I'll just press this button for a little bit because I can't count to 21.
And then I can go win money playing blackjack.
There you go.
That's how you win money.
Exactly. Yeah. Single deck?
You can.
Do you like single deck?
If it's just you and the dealer, you can win a lot of money pretty quick.
Yeah, if you find the right dealer and you get on the right streak, that's something. I do not know how to count cards, I swear.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no. You
don't tell them.
It's not technically illegal either. No. They just, quote unquote, frown upon it.
Yeah.
Right.
We frown upon you beating us.
And welcome to Gamble Talk with your host, Gambler. So let's get into
what we're talking about.
That's exactly what my friend Dylan used to call me when I used to bet too big.
Gambler?
Yeah, because all we're trying to do is get to the bar, and he's like, listen, Gambler. Time to stop.
Yeah, from that famous Simpsons episode where it took over Marge's brain. So let's get into the show, or I guess news, whatever's going on. So Trump, man. So obviously we all know that Russia had it out for the United States in the 2016 election. And, you know, by Putin's own admission, he wanted Donald Trump to win. So yesterday during right before the daily briefing, there was a parade of cabinet officials came out to sort of show a united front against the threat of Russian election meddling and cyber warfare, kind of, because John Bolton started off by just kind of saying a bunch of bullshit about like, you know, Trump is the toughest president who's ever been tough to a Russian ever. And then he sat his sad Muppet ass down. And then we had people like Kirstjen Nielsen, FBI Director Chris Wray, Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, General Paul Nakasone, who is the head of Cyber Command. They all basically had the same message, which is sort of like Russia fucked with us, is fucking with us, and will continue to fuck with us, and we will probably do something about it. Now, each person had a little bit of a different take. Like, I mean, Paul Nakasone was pretty straightforward. He's like, this is not going to fly, and we are, like, you know, we have a directive to address this. Now, I don't know if that means that the president himself has said, hey, you can take the break off, and now you can use everything at your disposal in your cyber arsenal to counter this and launch an offensive attack.
I feel like that didn't happen.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I don't know. But it's very clear that they were also showing sort of themselves to be like, look, we're in a tough spot where we know what's going on. We're trying to help, but we can only do so much without the fucking commander-in-chief actually telling us, you know, it's time to act. And it's just really unsettling to see that all these people who are like the spy chiefs and people who's business it is to know what's going on in the world, saying like, hey man, something bad is going to happen, and we don't have the commander-in-chief leading us.
I mean, objectively, if we're looking at this objectively and not with a, you know, this is our team biased, pretty strong move from Mr. Putin to bring our commander-in-chief out and parade him out and be like, hey, I have control of this dude, so anything you guys try to do, I'm going to see, because right. he's going to tell me.
Right.
So it was like he was like when everybody was reacting in Helsinki or whatever, I was like, no, this is he's saying a lot more than he's saying here, you guys.
Yeah.
Because like, what do we do?
Right. Because, yeah, he was sort of like, yeah, I wanted him to win. Look at him right there. We just talked for 2 hours and nobody knew what we talked about.
Except for a translator who, you know, I'm good at poisoning people. That's my thing. So I'm just saying.
Well, we'll see what happens.
So what you're saying is he's basically denying the reality. Like, these guys are all saying, hey, this is real.
This is real.
And they're just basically saying, but we can't do anything until the president actually acknowledges it's real?
They're saying that they can, but what they're saying is, like, of course we're going to, like, we formed a task force. We're going to do what we can. But you need, you know.
I think what they're saying is they're saying, listen, we can try some stuff, but it does have to go through this dingbat, and we don't know if he's right. telling them what we're about like, to do, right. and it's going like to be ineffective completely.
Like an idiot coffee filter where all the stuff just gets stuck right there.
Right, yes. Exactly.
Like the end of the cigarette that's just collecting all the tar.
Yeah.
All that tar is like the
And then it tweets.
Yeah.
Right. 100%.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, could you just imagine, like, after 9/11, like, if George Bush just, like, stayed in the cut, and then you have, like, cabinet officials being like, hey, man, America is going to be all right. It's like, hold on, where the fuck's the president? Like, where's the fucking leader?
Well, Daddy Bush has always been the only one since, like, every ex-president always has the option to get the security stuff every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the only ex-president to ever want it was Daddy Bush.
Well, yeah, you know, he's from the CIA.
I
mean,
yeah, so. I think, yeah, it's like him checking the paper every morning. Like, yeah. See what's going on in the world today.
You just can't quit that intelligence life.
But I think that says a lot about who he is. And then I'm sure his son is like, I don't want that anymore.
He's like, I want to buy a huge aquifer in Mexico and paint my pictures.
This is, no, I was a puppet. I kept saying that, you guys.
Do you think this will affect the ending to Creed 2?
I hope so,
because I really hate for politics to play out in my
my
Rocky movies.
We'll see what happens. I mean Ivan Drago's kid looks pretty tough.
Yeah, right.
He looks really tough in that trailer.
And at the end, it just goes Ivan Drago and just grabs poor Creed.
Yeah.
Nope, he's with me now.
No, he's with me. Sorry.
There's a writer's room just watching all this with like a total different look at it than everyone else. Like, this is a nightmare. You're telling us.
Yeah. Or like Ivan Drago somehow just, yeah, works a deal out with Creed to take a fall like in the sixth round. Yeah. Like, all right, that's a good man. Good boy. So moving on to the culture wars, the New York Times is showing everybody how cool of a publication they are. So they hired Sarah Jong to write, some op-eds and stuff for them and join that editorial board. But the problem here is that she made jokes about white people on Twitter a while back. So the alt-right and the conservatives are coming out full force and being like, she's racist. And the problem here isn't that the New York Times fired her. It's that they acknowledged their cries of racism as if they were valid in any fucking way and put out a statement about like, yeah, you know, there's bigotry like on all sides and we got to do something. And, you know, she'll never say anything like that again.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, here's the deal. They have to be victims in order to sort of really get their outrage machine going. And, you know, like this whole idea of when people of color like talk about white people, You know, it's a way of talking about the power structures that already exist that we're pushing back against. It's not the same as saying like, oh, like these black people deserve to get killed by the police or whatever. Yes. That's very different. So again, there's this whole thing where we see constantly that the right sort of weaponizes this faux outrage to try and get concessions from people who are actually objectively not doing anything wrong. But, you know, and like, but they also have problematic characters on their editorial board, like Barry Weiss, who's just so out there. I mean, read any number of her opinions and they are from planet like fucking unbelievable. But yeah, I think this is just a growing trend. So this week, this was the latest scalp, I think, that right-wing Twitter tried to claim in the sort of like, I can't believe they said that. And like, they are actually the racists for calling out racism.
It is a weird, it to me, what it boils down to is like a power thing where there is the and I've, you know, you can see it in every aspect of life, small town life to, you know, this bullshit. But it's like that some people know how to handle power.
Mm-hmm.
They understand like, oh, I'm in power now. Some people are going to say some shit at me because of that. That's part of the responsibility.
Right.
And some people don't know how to react back to it.
Right.
And as white people, we are the majority. So people get to say shit to us.
Right.
That's part of like, you know, not like being able to go to the cops and ask for directions.
Right.
That
or be like, I think this person at my pool has socks on.
Yes.
Can you come get them?
That kind of shit. Yeah. It's like, that's like a trade-off where there is like, that's how the world actually works. And if you want to acknowledge like that.
Yeah. But you're in that minority of people who are at least aware of how sort of structurally
racism
exists.
I'm coming to understand that I am part of a minority of that majority. Yes. I am coming to understand that. Yes.
This is like the most frustrating thing for me right now.
Right.
Like, especially when it comes to comedy and it comes to all this stuff. Like, you can't equate two things together like this. You can't say that, like, actually saying, like, White Lives Matter and all that bullshit is the same as somebody making a fucking joke over here.
Yeah, who said, I can't watch Breaking Bad because it's a show about white people whining. That's like a thing they cut out. And we're like, right.
Yeah.
See?
I understand.
Yeah.
It's incredibly silly and I don't know how to, like, I can't even look at it anymore. The stuff that they're trying to do to Michael Ian Black, you know, the stuff that did you see any of the stuff that went on at JFL with
what's the what that YouTuber character called?
Southern Mama.
Southern Mama. Yeah.
It's okay. Original premise too.
Yeah, super original. Mm-hmm. You know, stolen from Dot Fawn, stolen from, you know.
Right.
And but he gets up there and he just dies.
Right.
Like, it was the worst set. It was the diarrhea themed set.
That's being kind.
Yeah.
To what happened.
Yeah, it was bad. But to end it off and just go, oh, you know, comedy is a place for laughing, and that's what I brought you. It's not a place to talk about race or sexuality.
Right.
And then kind of walk off stage and then call Dulce precious. And
right.
Are you fucking kidding me right now?
It's just dumb, insulated. I mean, I do a bit, and I just did it across the South where I was the people asked me, like, what's the worst part of the South? And I'm like, Alabama, before they finished that question. And they're without a doubt, they're used like, what about Mississippi? I'm like, well, it's not Mississippi's fault. The education system there is really bad. They don't know any better. I did that in Mississippi, and I got applause. And they're like, he's done the research. We just... And then I did that in Birmingham. I was like, Alabama, they know better. They just don't give a shit. I did that in Birmingham and got applause, which is not what you're going for at all. I was like, I was trying to shame you guys. And you guys were like, that's us.
Yeah, we don't give a shit.
But it is that kind of. That's what you're. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's this thing, this assumption that you can equate two things. Like, he has any right to decide what comedy needs to be about,
right?
Especially after all these people came out and killed it, talking about race, talking about things, you know, sexuality, race and sexuality, and then some white guy over here deciding what's funny,
right.
Some YouTuber that's not even a stand-up.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing on Twitter. All this stuff is this group of people trying to equate two things that have nothing to do with each other, that they have no business deciding
what's right,
what's wrong.
Well, and part of that too is that thing of when anybody doing quote unquote art and they're critiqued and their response is always like, well, I made this much money and I sold this many tickets. Like, that's not what we're.
Right.
That's not the critique. We're critiquing the bullshit you're doing in your thing or the stolen part or whatever it is. And they're like, 150,000 last weekend. You're like, that's fair, but I mean, this is not what we're talking about.
That whole
here.
Thing with the fastest growing comedian in history.
What does that mean?
I don't know what that means.
Who is that?
Yeah.
That's what, same guy.
That's what he was, I'm the fastest growing. Okay. Cool.
In American history.
In American history.
Cool. Which, I mean, sure, we're, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how you equate any of that stuff, and I don't know that you could measure it back in the day. But
yeah, right.
But then you know you start looking at.
Mark Twain, I don't know, he rose pretty quick.
As fast as you could, considering how long it took books to get from place to place.
And that horse he was riding
on. Yeah, exactly. But when you start talking about this lady making problematic jokes, she made jokes.
Right.
This is why Twitter has to go away. Twitter has to go away, or we all have to just make like a pact, like a written pact, like we will not charge anybody for the bad jokes they made
right
10 years ago. We all swing, right?
Right.
As people, as human beings and as comedians, as professionals, we all take big swings and they're not always going to hit. And that's the whole point, right?
Yes.
If I had to hold myself accountable for everything I've ever said as a joke to somebody that didn't hit versus what did, I couldn't leave my house.
Right.
And
someone shot you in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that was like, if you held people accountable for jokes, like you held them accountable for truly terrible things that we don't hold people accountable for.
Right.
Right.
Like destroying people's lives financially.
Right.
That's a thing that happens every day. And it's, I think a lot, some of it may be a symptom of misplaced anger because we don't have those avenues right now to be like,
oh, of course.
Change this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
we apologize a lot, comedians, because we just want people to be happy. So when people are like, hey, you said this, like after a show, usually like, well, it's, you misunderstood what I was saying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to apologize for what I'm saying. I'm going to apologize for hurting your feelings because it's not what I intended.
Yeah.
Right.
And people don't get that.
And that's exactly fair. But that's the thing. Like what you're saying is a joke.
Yeah.
There may be some rings of truth in there and there may be some parts of that. But people like this alt-right kind of group, you know, what they're saying is what they believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. You can't equate those two things. And unfortunately, because it just lives on Twitter, all of a sudden everybody who's ever made a fucking joke is automatically that person, as opposed to this person that clearly states, like, I hate white people.
Right, right, right.
And they're like, oh, no, these are the same.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And until we can either just go, okay, let's erase all this stuff or take a step away from it, we're going to end up fighting these dumb battles where people try to compare two things like they're the same.
Yeah, that are totally incomparable. Yeah. And I think that's part of, I think, the feeling on the right, too, is that they're seeing that, like, liberal or progressive thought is sort of, like the preempt, like people just sort of gravitate towards that. And when those people have such sort of scathing critiques of how ignorant their opinions are, their only way to like to fight back is sort of be like, well, how do I take this person down by any means necessary, even if that's through some kind of, you know, just really weak argument.
If you examine the far left or the far right, they're very similar in what they want fundamentally, which is just people to do what they fucking want them to do. Without any, you know, pushback at all. That's either one, like, you can't say this or you can't say this. Like, saying, I'm still to the point, I grew up in a small town in the South where I heard all kinds of shit growing up.
Right.
A lot of it confused me because it was just white people. So I was like, I don't understand where the hatred's coming from. It's just the other white people. So it still confuses me. But I still come from the point where everyone should be able to say whatever they want. Whenever they want, that's fine. It's when they start legislating or when they start encroaching on your ability to have your rights, that's when it's a problem.
Right. If it's just
like, that's where even the left, I get in trouble because of my accent. And I'm like, hey, to the left, like, yo, just chill on saying what people can and can't. Let them say whatever. That's fine. You need to let them say whatever. When you're telling anyone they can't say something, that's when they're going to be like, well, now I need to do something.
Right.
That's where the argument, I think, right now is we need to pull that back and be like, let them say whatever the fuck they want to say.
Right.
It's fine.
So I guess in that sense, if people have the platform to sort of get more and more people on board or to obscure discussions about race or things like that, do you feel that there's no danger to that?
No, there's always a danger, but there's a danger to being alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a point that both sides are, we aren't addressing, is that one side is like, everything's dangerous, and the other side is like, everything needs to be safe, where it needs to be somewhere in the middle, because that's with the balance, and there's no balance right now.
Right.
To the left and
just
right.
Just extremes, just yes. Two extremes going like,
and then there's a lot of people, and there's a ton of people in the middle going like, both sides need to chill. And we're not being heard in the middle.
Right.
Because as soon as we say something, you're like, well, you're a moderate. You don't believe this and this. You're like, no, no, no. all of us can exist.
Right.
We don't have to kill each other.
Yeah. Well, that's an important thing to think about. With that, let's take a quick break, and we will be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
There's a lot happening these days. But I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters, without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with The 7 every weekday. So follow The 7 right now.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month. Taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we are back. So let's just get right into all of this more news. So yesterday, the Trump administration laid out an argument basically in front of a federal judge saying that the government shouldn't be responsible for finding the over 400 parents that were separated from their children at the border and who were deported and are no longer in the United States. So they're saying, oh, you know who should be actually responsible is the ACLU because they're suing us and on behalf of these parents. So they are the ones, it should be on them to fucking find these people that we deported, even though we misled them to say like, hey, if we deport you, like we can just, you know, we can get you back with your kids and you'll be all good.
I mean, I've always said, if I could just shed all these morals, being a billionaire would be so easy.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It'd just be such an easy rise to the, like, to the top. You right. just don't care about other people. You can make money just putting people in cages. And
this is the same argument that my daughter uses with anything around the house. Mm-hmm. Like, she will destroy a bunch of stuff and then go, well, it's not mine. That's not my job. You clean it up. Your job is to take care of the front room after. She just, like, littered it with bullshit. Like,
right.
He's just using these things. Like, I've made the biggest mess, and I've separated these families. You know what?
Yeah.
They're not my kids.
Right. And also, if you're so worried about it, why don't you do something about it?
Yeah.
You elected me, idiot.
And
I did, kind of.
Yeah.
Damn it.
But again, it's just them. They're really just, again, trying to absolve themselves of any responsibility for this shameful, horrific fucking policy, despite them having all the fucking resources to actually put these people back together. Like, I think someone, like some commentator was like, well, they, you know, they can probably raise money through GoFundMe. They can raise probably a bunch of, do some fundraisers and find that.
That's what the government was set up. It was a GoFundMe. The government was set up as a
GoFundMe.
As a GoFundMe. The OG government was like, let's put in money to like help each other just in case.
That's why it's the fastest growing government in history.
In history, yeah.
And GoFundMe is?
Yeah,
and yeah, like DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, she was saying, you know, like all the time that all the parents, they had the option to be deported with their children. But there have also been administration officials who also said that like around 75% of parents that were deported by themselves, they didn't leave any record that they actually consented to leave their kids behind. So this is just all part of the awful, awful shit that's happening, but also contributes to more chaos in this administration. And, you know, it's unbelievable how many fires we try to put out simultaneously, and then we're immediately distracted by a new one.
Understanding that this is like one of the shittiest things I've ever heard in my life, how do we help?
Yeah, the options are to help. Honestly, give our money to help the groups that are trying to legally fight this and put families back together. But honestly, the biggest thing is focusing on like what it means to have these people in power on the right or the left, whoever it is. But mostly if we're looking right now,
I think a lot of it is identifying who is doing this, yeah, where the money goes, and making it very clear who these people are. And 100%. That's what these people do more than what they do best is they camouflage who they are and what they're actually up to.
Right.
It's all these vague companies or this stuff out of here, geopolitical, blah, blah, blah. And it's like America first kind of stuff.
Right.
And then you look at it and you're like, this is pure. They are looking at numbers and you do this and you get this and you get this many people.
Mm-hmm.
You see these stories in like these Fox News, like Citadel group or whatever. And you see like, oh, this private prison's going to shut down if they don't get more heads in.
Yeah,
blah,
and you're
blah,
like,
blah.
I don't give
you're
a like, fuck.
Well, and they, right, they put it like the town is going to go under.
Right, right.
So these people vote the wrong way.
Right.
Because they don't understand. And it's not their fault because, and I say it's not their fault, but it is and it's not because it's like, look, we have to make money. And
right,
this is the only money that comes.
Well, and they're stuck because the infrastructure has been built around that thing.
Yes.
Like, they voted for long enough, so 20 years in, they're too
right
deep to pull it
they're
all
like,
away.
Well,
and they, don't
have that
they can't the move. Like, why don't you move? Like, to
yeah
where and do what?
Right.
They
well
can't sell yeah their land for nothing. You know, it's.
And I think if you look in this instance specifically, too, I mean, now that we're realizing that detaining immigrants has now become a $1 billion industry.
Right.
So that's really, you know, it's the private prison companies that are really the people who are fully reaping the benefits of this fucking
that's
policy.
Why they stalled on marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
Legalizing marijuana. They're like, well, we need another way to get all these people into this system.
Yeah, what can we suddenly just deem illegal?
Way,
yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. This.
Well, it looks like, again, things are just getting, I don't know, with Trump especially, like, he's becoming more and more unhinged. And I think we've seen a shift, especially after that Helsinki shit, where, like, it's only gotten, like, more blatant. Where, like, a few weeks ago, he was just begging people to ignore reality, like, quite literally. He's like, nah, and everything you're seeing, that's not happening. Like, that's pretty – that's an interesting tactic. Yeah, like, it seems like even more that the, like, sort of misinformation, you know, deception campaign is also ramping up to keep all of his supporters in this sort of state of blissful ignorance. And, I mean, when you look at the reality of the situation – he's out here calling the press the enemy of the people, but the reality is they're doing their fucking job and merely informing the public. They're not lying. I mean, at times there are stories that perhaps are maybe inaccurate or whatever, but not with the same malicious intent that a lot of the coverage coming from the right is. So, you know, he calls them the enemy of the people and does all this shit. And, you know, so yesterday, Jim Acosta was really trying to get an answer out of Sarah Huckabee Sanders because, as many people point to, whether it's the UN or historians, are like, saying that the press is the enemy of the people is textbook totalitarian leader's tactics 101, is just to delegitimize the press. That way, there's only one form of truth, and that's whatever the leader tries to create.
My mom did it.
Oh, yeah?
In our house, yeah. There was no outside press. Just
what she says is gospel.
Just what she said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
So what did you think rain was growing up?
Whatever she said it was that day.
Yeah.
I have to call her.
Yeah, be like, what is this again?
That's why I like living here. It rarely rains.
It's like the water boy.
Yeah.
He's like, I invented electricity.
That foosball is the devil. So Jim Acosta.
When I watch that movie.
Jim Acosta really tried to at least give Sarah Huckabee Sanders the chance to walk back, you know, the president's claim that, you know, this is a very dangerous tactic to be employing. And just listen to this interaction from yesterday.
For the sake of this room, the people who are in this room, this democracy, this country, all the people around the world are watching what you're saying, Sarah. And the White House for the United States of America, the President of the United States should not refer to us as the enemy of the people. His own daughter acknowledges that. And all I'm asking you to do, Sarah, is to acknowledge that right now and right here.
I appreciate your passion. I share it. I've addressed this question. I've addressed my personal feelings. I'm here to speak on behalf of the president. He's made his comments clear.
Wow. I mean, she sounds like a well-versed in therapy, shitty partner breaking up with, like in an argument.
Right.
Where it's like, no, you cheated on me. I caught you in our bed. And she's like, I'm sorry you feel that way.
I hear you.
I hear what you're saying. And I can understand, like, if
that
you
passion.
Think that's what happened. That
share
passion,
your anger.
Yes. Yeah. Where you're like, you're doing it right. You're having sex with him right now.
No. He's test driving.
No, I understand why that would make you feel that way, but that's not what's happening.
Yeah. Again, that's why I'm like not sure why we even need to cover these press briefings anymore. Because all that happens is that Sarah Huckabee Sanders goes up there, just lies and tries to explain away all the nasty, dumb shit the president says or does. And it's just a big gaslighting session. There's nothing really ever of value that truly comes out of those briefings aside from more controversy. It's just more like, well, the thing that came out is now she's trying to say that he didn't mean what. There's never like, oh, wow, we found out some truth today from the briefing.
Well, didn't she just say, I agree with you, you're absolutely right, but it doesn't matter what I say, it's just what the president told me.
And that is kind of what she's been saying for a long time.
Yeah.
She's like, listen, you guys know what's happening here, and this sucks for everybody, okay?
But this is what the president said.
Yeah. And understand, I am starting to understand how shitty this is, but my dad, you guys know who my dad is.
Yeah.
So I grew up with this, and I don't understand how wrong it truly is.
Right.
And
even though he's a bass playing fool. Yeah. Have you seen him play bass, Mike Huckabee?
Yes. I was thinking about that.
Yeah. It's so weird. I'm like, oh.
Well, it's church. You grew up in the church.
Yeah, it makes me ashamed to be a bass player. So they love this sort of narrative of like the media is so mean to us and all this other shit. And the GOP like put a tweet out about how they have these quote unquote studies that quote unquote prove the media only covers the negative aspects of the administration or whatever. But these fucking things are hardly scientific. Like one of them just sort of added up all the times there was a mention of a Trump policy and whether it was positive or negative. So if it was stuff like the trauma that is experienced by families that are separated or children that are separated gets a negative score.
You guys talking shit about us again.
And then they say that, like, rather than coverage, that could read that the trauma that illegal immigration causes Americans. Like, so everything is just about flipping the script and just looking at just the shit in the total upside down.
It's fun. It's just fun every day. Yeah. It's like when I can't wait to when people are like, hey, what was living during the Trump times like? I'm like, remember 9/11? It was like 4 years of that day. It's just like it's like when you woke up and you're like, wait, what happened? Oh my God, what's going to happen? Just 4 years of that every day.
That's not good.
They did. I didn't know we could do that.
You can't?
Okay.
Well, the same thing with the rallies too. Like, I'm not sure why I don't understand why networks insist on sending these full teams to cover these rallies. All they are is just Trump going up there, staying on script for like 5 minutes and then just just inciting the crowds and shit like that.
Well, there's no money in solution. It's all conflict. And I don't even think it's like that grand design thing that some people think it is. I think it's in the moment. These producers, they're like, what's the conflict in this moment? That's what I have to produce in this package.
Right.
Yeah. And then it's just to get people to watch in this motherfucking second. Oh my God. Where's that Adderall? Is the kid bringing it? Cool. Let's do this now. We need this. Okay, let's go here. There'll be drama for sure.
Yeah.
And that's what we're addicted to.
I just figure that they needed footage for the History Channel documentaries
that right.
come out 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, when they have to move away from the Hitler stuff,
they're like,
we got to have all this footage.
We need
if we
it
don't
all.
Have the B-roll, what are we going to do?
I was thinking about, like, it is that whole generation of of dads that have just been watching Hitler for fucking
20 years.
And they're like, let's do it here. Let's do it here. I want to see it live.
Our great-great-grandchildren will all be watching the same stuff. They'll just be like, just sitting there, just watching the old Trump stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, even at these rallies, right, like his favorite move is to point back at the cameras and go, you see these people, they're the enemy and blah, blah, blah. And clearly, I mean, they love that shit. And
Vince McMahon's like, I wrote this.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, this is all me. You saw even at Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, where he spoke last night, there were more QAnon conspiracy theorists out there who are the people who believe that, you know, this person Q or this group of people Q who are anonymously leaving crumbs for all of these really desperate right-wing conspiracy theorists to believe that all the Mueller probe is really about him and Trump taking down Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Oh my God! What a fucking
it's Matt and Trey, a stretch. Right? Matt and Trey wrote that. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So yesterday at the rally, CNN sent a guy to go talk to them again, and like you know, these people hook, line, and sinker. They love this whole anti-media narrative, and just sort of we pulled a couple clips from the some of the QAnon fans at the Trump rally yesterday.
There hasn't been any non-evidence yet.
A major mantra among QAnon followers: the press is the enemy.
You guys are.
So you don't believe in the First Amendment?
I totally believe in the First Amendment.
Well, you don't. You just said the press is the enemy.
Well, you guys are weaponized. You guys are totally weaponized by the CIA.
What is that?
You guys are weaponized by the CIA.
I don't know anybody in the CIA except a couple of people I've interviewed over the years.
Okay.
But weaponized, what does that even mean?
That's fair. Okay.
Like you say stuff that doesn't even mean anything.
The term
weaponized by the CIA.
Conspiracy theorists, the term.
Do you think I'm weaponized by the CIA?
Maybe not to your knowledge, and that's unfortunate.
You believe there is a deep state?
Yes.
That is.
And what do you think that deep state's doing? You think they're running this country?
I think they were, and they're petrified now because they're losing their control.
But Donald Trump's the president. He's running the country, right?
Yeah, but he's having to fight against the deep state.
I mean, he said he could do it all himself. Everything would be so easy when he came into office. And you think he's fighting with the deep state a year and a half into his term?
I think he's been fighting since before he was elected.
And who is in this deep state? Who are the people in it?
Oh, I definitely believe that, like, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Obamas.
So you think the Clintons, the Bushes, and the Obamas are running this country as we stand here in the rain?
No, they're trying.
I mean, she's not wrong.
I just like that they get out of the house, right? Like, I'm sure that these people have not been outside for a while, so this is nice. Get some exercise. Those legs, those knees probably need a little stretch.
What's funny is, like...
In the middle of her, you could see her start to realize, like, she hasn't talked to a lot of people in a while. And you're right, in the middle of it, you could hear her being like... This sounds a little nutty.
Yeah, because especially when he goes, right. So you think that they're running the country right now?
She's no. When another human being says that back to me, I can see why that sounds crazy.
Versus me using my confirmation bias while looking at a screen
and
just reading text that goes, yes. Protect me from being a little more aware of how bad the situation actually is. And also, I feel like deep state is starting to seem like analogous with like waning white supremacy or influence, or they're like, well, now they're scared. And they're fighting back. I'm like, isn't that you right now? Isn't that what's motivating you? Is this idea that there was this once power structure that you wish
that is a
remained?
Fun way to flip it on and be like, well, do you guys want to be in the deep state? And you're like, well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that would sound good.
I would be in the Illuminati.
What's the game? Or is there like a specific type of like psychological or game theory where you try and put the person in power to make them sound like they're the one that's the minority? Like these guys are, you know, Donald Trump is... absolutely in power right now.
Right.
He's got all his people. The Republicans are controlling everything. But what is the psychology of trying to convince people that they're still the minority? Like they're still fighting.
It's a persecution thing.
Yeah, where it's persecution. Like, right.
Yeah, it's a lot of how they get Christians too, is like they're being persecuted for their beliefs. And then the people are like, well, it's fighters. You know, I'm from the state of Tennessee, which is a volunteer state, which always made me laugh because in seventh grade, you learn Tennessee history. You have to. And that's when it hit me. I was like, oh. We were mercenaries. That's what volunteer
means. That's
what
the balls are.
We were just like, oh, there's a fight? Cool. Yeah, we're down. Whose side? I don't care. It doesn't.
Just cut
as
the
long
check.
As I get to murder for free and I don't get punished and you guys are going to pay me. That's what we all live in this state.
Right.
So it's just motivating those. Right. And that's what our whole country is full of, those type of people.
Right.
That got that, fuck you.
Yeah.
So you just motivate them.
When the deep state finally goes, what comes next? What do we invent beyond the deep state? What's like the subatomic deep state?
Yeah. David Icke's got it, where it's the reptilians.
Yeah exactly. Reptilian overlords, shapeshifters.
Right. I can get on board with that.
I can too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm down to
if I'm being honest, there's like 2% of me that it's like, I don't know, maybe. Yeah. There might be reptilians.
There is. There's there a point where be. We can all get on board.
Yes. We can be like, all right, deep state done. Hey, can we all agree that we need to fuck up these reptilians?
Yeah, there is some alien motherfuckers running shit that look like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it gets tricky when you have to identify them, and then it starts all over again.
There's danger to everything, and we have to admit that.
Well, then the other thing, too, again, that Trump, like one of his other lies, is really just lying about the economy. And yesterday we talked about how—
That was a good transition into what we were talking about. I just want to acknowledge we went from reptilians to you going into that.
Yep,
that needs to be—
That's called a hard pivot.
How good that was.
Pivoting in the paint.
You weren't going to get—
So one of the things that he always has to tout is the economy and shit like that. And aside from, you know, the Washington Post has sort of been tracking the frequency of his false statements. So around the time the first year, first 7 months, he was doing about 4.9 false statements a day. Right now he's at 7.6. So he says anything from like, you know, Kim Jong-un and I are on the same page, baby. So nuclear threat over, despite the fact that we know they are continuing to build missiles and they don't give a fuck, or shit like, you know, him saying that the economy's never been stronger or have incredible success in terms of job growth, even though annual job growth is under his presidency has actually been slower than the last 5 years of Barack Obama's term. But it is working, because especially when you look at the soybean farmers who, despite the fact that they are in terrible shape, they are still like really ready to fucking ride or die with this president. I think this was CBS. They went to go talk to a group of soybean farmers just to really kind of get their temperature, because like, yo, these tariffs are really fucking you up. Like, and you're like on the front lines of this trade war and you're cool with this despite your livelihood being at risk. So this is just a little bit of an exchange with some of these soybean farmers.
Did you all vote for President Trump?
I did.
Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with why I support what's going on right now.
Do you support the administration even though you're being hurt by these retaliatory tariffs?
I do. I'm a good American. I believe that we all have to toe the line.
So you're okay with bearing the brunt of these tariffs?
If I had my druthers, no. But am I willing to take my lumps for the better, you know, for the benefit of the entire country? Yes, I personally am.
You're willing to weather the storm for a certain amount of time, but how long is too long?
Well, the Scottish in me says to the death.
Well, if you ask actual Scottish people that live in Scotland, they'd be like, yo, motherfucker, get your shit straight.
Yeah. They're like, yo, don't fuck my rep up with this thinking.
Also, I can give you some insight into the language she was using was confusing, in that they're going to keep saying, you say weather the storm to a bunch of farmers, that is hold your position.
Right.
They have to, once they invest in something, it is a lot longer investment than everybody that lives in a city or something like that that's getting their shit. So they are not being completely, I don't agree with most of what they're saying, but I understand how they're being manipulated in that they have to think that way.
Oh, of course.
They have to fucking bow in because the winter's coming, and then we have to, I hope rain comes and this stuff, and this is how our livelihood, you have to be strong, willed. And somewhat stubborn.
Right.
That's how they're thinking.
Are soybeans as subsidized as corn?
Yeah, without it. I mean, not as, but it's the same shit. Yeah, where it's like it's all relative. And some of these people are millionaires, and they're not being clear about that either.
Yeah.
Because you got to lean into a little bit of that stuff, too. Like, they're literally just being paid by the government to make the—
Oh, 100%.
Burn their crop.
And also, like when
you
look at, you know— Trump has floated the idea of $12 billion in subsidies to help offset the just trauma of his dumb fucking trade war. And they're not going to like what we picture when we think of like agrarian America, like, oh, like small family owned farms.
No.
These are like gigantic operations.
Huge.
Yeah, they're not. So it's all obscured. It's like, yeah, I'll use the word farmer, but I'm talking about huge agribusiness companies that are really reaping the benefits of this.
It's more complicated than the media is going to make it, because
100%.
It doesn't fit in 2 minutes to explain, well, there's a back history to how this is being exploited by subsidies and blah, 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 blah. And these aren't, this isn't American Gothic. These are two dickheads.
Right. Who have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah, we'll wait for that.
Yeah.
Wait for that check.
All right.
Let's
They're going to tax our weed, though, right?
Huh?
No more taxes on our weed, though?
They're going to have to. I mean, we're not exporting it yet.
That's right. So
it's not internationally, you know. Hit me up on Fed. I'll FedEx you something, though. All right, guys, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we're back, and I wanted to talk a little, pretty quickly, about Disney's latest attempt to sort of sanitize the real-life stories behind their movies. So one of our writers, Jan McNabb, pointed out that there's a new new Disney Christopher Robin movie that's coming out that's about the adult Christopher Robin, who's now like this middle-aged dude, and he's like visited by Winnie the Pooh, who I guess is like real now, not just a toy that he used to bring.
Listen, like, if you do your life right, and if I'm doing mine right, about 45, 46, I'm going to be able to check out and just do any of the drugs I've always wanted to do. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a guy living his dream.
I've done ayahuasca before. I've been visited by a series of bears.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then this might
love
be more of
honey.
A,
I love it.
A documentary to you than anything. But yeah, so like, you know, the original books and movies, it was always sort of clear that the characters were toys, but not these animations, and the whole point was sort of to celebrate the imagination, right? But this film is really kind of it takes a turn on how the real life Christopher Robin, how his life was, because he wasn't really saved by Winnie the Pooh. He was like, Winnie the Pooh kind of fucked his whole life up. Like his dad, A.A. Milne, or Milne as you pronounce it, used Christopher Robin's real name in the Winnie the Pooh books. And by the time he went to school, like, he was bullied because of this shit to the point that he literally had to take boxing classes to defend himself from all the people giving him shit.
A boy named Sue situation.
Like that whole Phantom Menace kid, right?
Yeah. Oh, Jake Lloyd?
Jake Lloyd, yeah.
Another detail about Christopher Robin that probably didn't make it into this film because it's supposed to be a fun Disney film is that the real Christopher Robin, he married his first cousin, which caused a tremendous rift in his family to the point where she like refused to see him while she was on her deathbed. And like this is like a really sort of dark story behind this man's journey.
Who refused to see him?
His own mother.
Oh, his mom. Oh,
okay. Yeah, his own mother, because like, she's like, you married a cousin.
Yeah, like, wife's like, nope, we're cousins now. Yeah. And I don't.
And no, sorry. Yeah, if that wasn't clear. His own mother refused to see her while she was on her deathbed because she was so just disgusted by his marriage. And like this whole real sort of Christopher Robin journey, it wasn't so much about reuniting with Pooh. He like wanted to distance himself from it as much as possible. Like, you know, like he gave away his stuffed animals in 1940, like the real ones, like without regret. He was just like, please take these fucking things from me, which I think now are on display at the New York Public Library. And he even like signed the rights away to his agent for like $1,000. But that was in 1929. So that's a decent check, but
mentally ill.
Yeah.
Disney's weird like this. Like, they did the same thing basically with the Mary Poppins stuff.
Exactly.
Right? It was all, she hated working with Disney. And I don't know why Disney wants to rewrite everything. Like, just everybody got along with Disney for some reason. It was like, no, it was great. Back in the 20s, we all had fun. But everybody hated.
Yeah. When he was this racist, misogynistic fucking monster.
The first time we went to Disneyland, my fiance, who is a wonderful little Jewish woman, we were walking through there and she goes, I could see a Nazi design in this shit.
All those hidden Mickeys. It's you just like, you know,
it's like every, yes, there's just like, and everything has a place, and you just see there's a little bit of fear behind everyone that works there's eyes.
Yeah.
But it is impressive.
Yeah. Well, it's shout out to the crazy man Walt Disney.
I mean, the whole Winnie the Pooh thing obviously was just built to make people about my age cry, right? Like, I'm supposed to go there and like, oh, I miss my childhood.
I lost my imagination. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so fleeting.
And it will.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I don't understand how they have to make it that way. They could do a perfectly decent job of that without deciding to, like, rewrite this poor kid's history.
Yeah. It's
that's their thing is, like, there's always a happy, there's no postmodern.
I think it's because they want to sequelize things. Like, the whole thing with Mary Poppins, right? They're doing a sequel to Mary Poppins now, and they kind of have to, like, get past the part where the writer refused to let them do anything until way after she died. So, like, let's sanitize that story a little bit so that sequel
can come back and then no one remembers. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, she...
evil and designed.
P.L. Travers, who was that author, she wasn't even invited to the premiere of Mary Poppins. But, like, in the film, like, it's like, oh, yeah, she was, like, you know, she's, like, in tears because, like, she the Disney magic had washed over her and she was so moved by what happened. But, yeah, like... And I think her credit was also really small. So that whole story, too, is another, sanitizing of history. But, yeah, the reviews of this Christopher Robin movie are pretty bad. It's only like a 59 on Metacritic. But, like, as JM points out, the strangest conceit of this Christopher Robin film is that Pooh, Tigger, Eeyore, and everybody else aren't figments of his imagination. And if they're real, then, like, the whole story falls apart again because it makes Christopher Robin seem like a neglectful dick who, like, forgot about them in the first place and was like, oh, yeah, let me check on these guys really quick.
There are some leaps I think you have to make.
Of course.
That weird Hook vibe to it, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, come back, even though, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, and that's heroin, right? That's what heroin does. That's what the
heroin. In terms of?
It's just always just like, hey.
Hey,
that's
me.
What Hook's about. I think that's what Chris
starts
Robin's
with an H,
about.
You know, because you're hooked.
Just trying to pull it back into our daily zeitgeist.
That's fine. My daughter's obsessed with the Demi Lovato stuff, so she sends me little tweets every once in a while. It's Disney heroines, and it has all the Disney princesses with like looking like they're on heroin, and at the very bottom has Demi Lovato, and she just
edgy
that's
humor.
Really funny.
She's 14.
I mean, that's perfect. Yes.
So that's exactly
14-year-old humor. Yeah.
Is it heroin she's on?
Yeah.
That's a tough
one. It's a tough one.
Shit.
Yeah. Let's just get in quickly
People
into.
People really like it.
Yeah. Let's it's get into Boyd Watch really quick. Oh, sorry. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, alt-right, that's one thing that's brought us all together. It's the red states, blue states. Everybody's doing Oxy.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it's the saddest. I did a show in Huntington, West Virginia. It's the saddest thing. to where you're just like, it's you pull into the town, you're like, what the fuck? And they're like, yeah, dude. That's just how people are. They're like, yeah.
But yeah, but don't look, but you know, don't ask the government to like help anybody with this. No,
that's what they also ACLU is for.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And DARE. So DARE, get your shit together.
GoFundMe.
Yeah, GoFundMe, please.
GoFundMe, America.
Go help me. So let's do a little quick Bloid watch. So, you know, the magazines, they were whatever this week, usual stuff about trying to act like Prince Philip is dying or, you know, Queen Elizabeth fell over when really they just have a photo of her picking something up off the ground. But I want to draw attention to this story that was coming out about how David Pecker, who owns American Media Inc., who owns all these tabloids that always, you know, circle the wagons for Trump optically and in a publicity sense, they're starting to distance themselves a little bit because they're realizing more and more how in like they are just entwined in all of his controversy, especially with a lot of this Karen McDougal stuff, Stormy Daniels situation. But it seems like, yeah, they're starting to it's starting to hit them a little bit by like dialing back the Trump material that the circulation numbers are also declining a little bit. I think one of the things, too, is that we see that because they were caught up in all this catch and kill controversy where, you know, they would buy the damaging stories and then just sit on them. So they never got out. It's sort of important to point out how wide this sort of web goes. Like, it's just sort of interesting because people noticed that the Wikipedia page of David Pecker was being like scrubbed to sort of make his role in a lot of these controversies like less and just be like, oh, yeah, and he's a friend of Donald Trump. Nothing about the National Enquirer or anything like that. And then so people started looking and they tracked it to IP addresses that led to William Morris Endeavor's offices here in LA. Mm. And WME is noteworthy because they're sort of like this connective node between Pecker and Trump. You know, the agency currently has AMI as a client and was also formerly representing the president. And as we all know, Ari Emanuel, who Ari Gold from Entourage is based off of, who that, you know, his agency, also, you know, often branded the King of Hollywood. He has a history with both men. And he also, like them, has leveraged his relationship with David Pecker to kill negative stories about either himself or his clients. And it's also interesting to point out that David Pecker is also a longtime financial supporter of Chicago's mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who is Ari's brother. And Rahm used to work for Obama. And Trump, too, was a Rahm Emanuel campaign booster. And I think he donated like $50,000 to his mayoral campaign in 2010 at Ari's request.
Yes. You went pretty. I mean, you got some Old Testament stuff back there and begot this and begot that. I agree with the dude that owns the Enquirer and all those dudes, without a doubt, are not good people. But with all the, this person gave this person money, it's like that's going to keep coming out where it's like,
oh, yeah, no, not to say that they're implicit.
That's like a business decision at this point. Like if you're in, I'm not defending it, but I'm just saying to have a business, it's going to come out like, oh, they gave money to everyone.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not under any illusion that there's.
So that gets murky is all I'm saying with that.
No, not at all. But it's interesting, too, because I'm pretty sure I think it was Ari Emanuel who introduced like whoever was doing publicity for Saudi Arabia to AMI's David Pecker, because there was like this bizarre advertisement free issue that was like the new kingdom with Mohammed bin Salman on it. That was like totally just sort of trying to obscure what's really happening in Saudi Arabia. But again, it's just sort of showing that there's this connection of like media and everything that they all have. They sort of rely on each other to control the optics of any given situation.
Oh, I think, yeah. Well, that like anything, it just power. Yeah. Once you get power, you're going to crack. It's not about money anymore. You realize that?
We have to diversify, first of all, so you're going to have to hit up everything. And then second, it really is just about money and power.
Yeah. But what's odd, I guess, too, is, you know, Trump is so quick to point out how other people have donated money and how that indicates some kind of allegiance or whatever, when you could be like, bruh, you gave money to Chuck Schumer, you gave money to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, this other thing too.
I think that just sort of weakens that argument for him when he tries to say, oh, well, the wife of this FBI person got money from like a known Hillary donor after the fact equals this thing.
It's just like poker. Like, and if you could just better your odds by giving more bets and more bets and more bets, that you're going to make more money in the end. And the less rules to where you can give all that money or you can put a bet here and put a bet in this name.
Yeah.
That's what all this is that's going to come out is like, oh, all these companies just don't care as long as they have some say in who's saying it.
And preserve their power.
Yeah.
Right. As long as the lobby gets what they need. Yes. It doesn't matter who's in charge, allowing them to do it.
Yeah. They don't give a shit.
It's, yeah. Yeah. But I guess, again, yeah, people just have to realize there's a lot of these narratives that we believe in of like what the sides are, when really it's sort of people are wealthy at the expense of people being poor.
We have to, I think, as a country, have to. There's a willing delusion a lot of Americans have about how we get the lifestyle we have. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're a lot of people are willing to admit some of the shitty, terrible things we have done to afford this lifestyle.
Right.
And if you want to keep it up, there's some shit we have to do. Our last president did all secret with robots.
Right.
This guy's, I don't know what he's doing, and he doesn't either, but I'm just saying, like, it's shitty.
It's less savvy.
We all have to make a change if you want to make a change, mm-hmm. is what's going to happen, to quote MJ, I think it was.
Thank you so much for bringing Michael Jackson back into this. Oh, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me today. Let's just go around and tell everybody where, let's plug some, share some socials, or what y'all doing. So, Jason, what's going on with you, man?
Okay, well, after all this talk, after all this political talk, I really do want to bring up one thing that we're doing that's really exciting to me. We're creating a podcast based, more of a documentary thing, not really a comedy. Hopefully we get some comedians in there to talk about it, but we're actually sitting down with some people in Mississippi for the Senate race with David Berea, who's the Democratic candidate in Mississippi, trying to flip at least one of those seats to a Democrat.
Okay.
And so we're working with them right now. Right now, it's called Mississippi Goddamn. And we're going to hopefully be able to have that thing out there just in time for the midterms. So we're looking for support on that. And that's something that, you know, we really believe in and we're really trying to work on outside of comedy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, please check out starburns.audio.
Okay.
We have 40 shows going on right now at any given time. It's a lot. Like I said, we got the Sklars, we got the Harmon, we got Amanda Seals, Roy Scovel. We just brought on Kyle Kinane and his show Boogie Monster.
That's my buddy Dave Stone's on there too.
Dave Stone's on there. Very, it's funny, awesome. Man. Very, very funny show. Both very funny people. We just picked up this new show called Mormon and the Meth Head, which you got to check out. It's about a former Mormon and a former meth head.
So I bet they have similar stories.
Yeah. Jessa and Aaron, and they're hilarious. But please check all that stuff out. And then I do have a Twitter.
Right.
I've tried to use it. It's at Oatmeal Johnson.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, Smith gets taken very fast.
Yeah, very quickly.
Oatmeal
yeah.
Johnson's good.
I like that one.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I'd ask you for a tweet that you like, but as we talked earlier, you know, you're trying to stay off the Twitter because it's a cesspool.
Yeah. Well, my daughter tried to tell me things last night, and so she told me what I should look at. But then I didn't really understand any of the stuff that she was telling me. She said that I should look up. First, she said that the underrated thing that I should let you guys know about is our communism memes. She thinks communism memes are hilarious right now. She said that I
don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know. Her and her friends are obsessed with it. And she said, I need to look up Shane Dawson, Cody Coe, and Noel Miller, and I needed to avoid anything by Emma Chamberlain and the Dolan twins.
Interesting.
So that's all I know now.
Shane Dawson. A little bit of a controversy character. Yeah, tell her to check out Late Stage Capitalism memes. Those are also very, very good.
Yeah, I don't know what these 14-year-olds are looking at. I don't know why we're talking about communism so much in my house.
Billy Wayne, what about you, my man?
I am all over the place right now. I'm about to go out. I'm going to be in Manhattan, Kansas City, Missouri next week. The Accidental Comedy Festival in Cleveland at the end of the month. And Nashville, Tennessee. April 18th, I'm doing this.
April?
Fucking August. Sorry.
It's okay.
I was in Dublin last week, and my mind is messed up. I had a great time in Dublin.
Dublin, Texas?
No, Dublin, Ireland.
Ah, okay.
That's fair, though, Dublin, Texas.
Yeah, hey, man.
Sounds like somewhere I would go, but it's very fair. Yeah, what else?
Do you have a Twitter, my man?
Billy Wayne Davis. I think what I'm going to start doing is the 3D gun thing came out, and I just searched 3D print this dick and just retweeted like there's a bunch of people saying stuff like that, and I was like, this is really funny.
Just 3D print this dick.
So I just went through and retweeted everybody. So I think that's how I'm gonna treat Twitter, that and promote my shows and just be like, I'm not gonna say anything anymore. I'm just gonna be like, yesterday was like I'm gonna 3D print your mom, and there was like a bunch of people saying, I mean, going back to like 2015, so I was just going through and retweeting.
You think anybody from 2015 is upset now that their 3D print your mom joke is resurfacing after all these years?
They would be like, that's weird. Why is that? looking through my tweet. I never thought of that. That is just a weird retweet.
Like I tried to hide that part of me.
That is, yeah, because it's easy to find. You just, you just search the thing. So, yeah, you can find me there.
It was funny. I was thinking of tweeting something over the weekend of the idea of the band name Imagine Dragons, where I was like, what if you did Imagine Dragons? So then I go on Twitter and I go, I know somebody's tweeted this before. And lo and behold, it's you.
Oh, from like, okay. That explains.
Like
I remember
2 years
you,
ago. And I was like, of course it was Billy Wayne Davis. It was like, what did you say? I was like, seriously, though, Imagine Dragons.
For real. Imagine Dragons.
You can find me at Miles of Gray. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. We have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we have show links and our
footnotes.
See, had to do it myself. Solo dolo out here. And where we have show links and also links to the song that we're going to ride out on, which I'll get to in a second. A tweet I want to call out, aside from Billy Wayne's from earlier, is one from Jabuki Young White, who said, retail and service workers who openly scroll through their phone on the job are anti-capitalist legends. So please remember that. These people are legends. And yeah, to ride us out today, I want to play just an old school Roots song that I just feel like doesn't get enough love. It's from the album, Do You Want More? But this is the Roots with Dice Raw, called The Lesson Part 1. It's got a little beatboxing, and you know, the rhymes are just... They're gospel. So that's that. That's the lesson. That's been this season. Tune in Monday. Jack will be back. Oh, and if you guys are looking for that Zeitgang merchandise, go to tpublic.com/thedailyzeitgeist, and you can cop some t-shirts. You know, help us out. Support us. Keep the lights on. And with that, we'll see you Monday, because it's the Daily Show. Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Definition is wild. I wrote graffiti as a juvenile, resting on Deuce Trey, and used to boost grade Kang goals with 555 souls from the streets of the Philadelphiatic insane. For monetary gain, niggas are slain on the train. It's homicide for wealth, stealth missions for crack in the alleyways where niggas get grazed in the back from straight shots. Clips with hollow tips for your spine, or either remain calm, catch a rhyme to your mind. Niggas, you know my style. I run a motherfucking rap muck with Malik in a U-Haul truck. I stand 5'7" in command of the party and scam like Uncle Sam. I'm never caught up in the glass eye of your action cam, cause I'm down low. Artistic, exquisite rap folk that get the dough. It's the Philly Borough Dread, thoroughbred for Dolo. I bag solo like a nigga that boosts polo. Stepping through the corridor of metaphors, looking over my left shoulder, the mic still feel colder than before. With this jazz shit, I hit your jaw, Dice Raw. Get up on a mic, my young poor. I be the nigga blowing up the spot on tour. Surely real to the core, old school, like 84, I never die. Raps till my lungs collapse, then relax until my knack for tracks. Bring it back on time. When I rhyme, my rep remain. Either go against the grain and your ass is found slain. I overcome. Niggas want styles and I throw you some. Show you some. Get on the mic and take it over, son. Dice Raw. Dice Raw. The motherfucking wild noise.
Get on the mic.
Get on the mic and perpetrate in his voice.
I leave niggas missing in action like the dads in the projects. My style like a nomad. Travel around and catch rat. I'm ill versatile with the skill no more. Whack MCs wanna flex, but these styles ain't raw. Got to know the real meaning of the ill shit. Shit. I knew mad damage, but never will catch a bed with my knapsack full of ill shit that I just boosted from the corner store when I let loose more flavor. That's me ripping heads off from the scenes. Niggas didn't play like Jeru and come clean. I beat down on their heads like drum machines or 808s, cause my style flows out great and super spectac with all the raw rap. Pull a metal chair out my knapsack, I cross your back, crack. Now do you feel the pain? Of course, I guess you're believing that I'm insane. When I'm tagging my name upon the train, I got so much pride, I got so much soul, with lyrics high to make niggas stop, drop, and roll. Now check me out one time, pull your ass, fast style's equivalent of an AIDS infected Glock blast. Niggas know my style, plus they really want more. Props from Mount Vernon to Mount Rushmore. Okay kid, you know my style, this buck wild, little bit chill that you can never get when I'm thinking in particular flavor that you want. I sit back and smoke a fat bun in class. Teachers can kiss my ass, I'm twice Dice, bigger, deep roll. Never take a bad fall, smack your head up against the wall like playing handball. My style's ill, I slam like Hulk Hogan. Dice roll, written on my arm, niggas know my slogan. While I read your last breath, niggas better watch. chunks like food salad. My style smooth like mallet. Blunt, say what you want. If you got beef, then come get it. If you don't, well, then forget it. My rap style's exquisite. I'm Royal Daddy, like niggas with no Trojans on the stage. When I'm on, I got to keep my composure. Where I'm from, it's like a whole different world. Hop on a train, honey dipping. I'ma snatch your scrubs. Most corrupt motherfucker in the 10th grade. Juvenile calls, young McKay could not fade. Don't ask me, honey, I'm not the one for stressing. If you wanna know, better ask brother question. Cause he know the time like I know the time. When I grab the microphone, it's like summertime. Lay back to recline in my lazy boy chair. Dice draw the wild droid, I'm the fuck up out of here.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.